For November 16th, 2013, we talk about the disappointing new next-gen era, the Dark Souls 2 beta, and we ask you about Easter eggs. Don't worry, my voice doesn't sound like this for the rest of the episode. I just forgot my microphone and I'm traveling. Welcome to the 42nd level. My name is Cole Ross.
I'm Dennis Furia.
I'm David Meismith.
I'm Ben Merkel.
And you are listening to The Level, a podcast for people who love video games. Thank you so much for joining us tonight, both to the listeners and to my stalwart co-hosts. So there is something I'd like to remind everybody to do. Normally we save this for the end of the show, but I'd like to put it up now just because it's been a little bit. But we're on the iTunes Store as a podcast that you can download and subscribe to. Been a little bit since we had one of those reviews. Not here to make you feel bad, but
that's no. The real point of this podcast,
yeah,
though.
Yeah.
So
is for the good feelings that come when we are acknowledged.
Basically, if we don't make our internet point quota, we get thrown off.
Yeah, no. If we don't get at least like one review a month, like Rocco's gonna come and break my kneecaps. He uses his bare hands, like most hired goons use a tire iron. But he's
old school.
He is
the gooniest.
He is very passionate about his work.
it's really, an artisan knee breaking.
Okay, that's what you look for in a thug.
Yeah. Just artisanal heirloom knee cappings. Oh yeah. So this is just me saying, hey, you know, if you are unafraid of iTunes, then I would ask that you do that because it does help us. And guess what? We won't say it at the end of the show.
There you go.
Yeah. Cool. So, otherwise, what we have in store for you, this episode, we've got, a multiplayer about some Easter eggs, here in November, which is prime Easter season. Dennis and I are probably going to talk about some of that dang old, Dark Souls 2 beta, and then just a bunch of other stuff in general. So why don't we get started? So yeah, my story, this was brought to my attention by Jala, a longtime fan and super fan. Both at the same time, earned both distinctions. She told me and brought it to my attention on Twitter that Amazon is now selling PSN stuff. Mm-hmm. So you can actually go on there at duckfeed.tv/tipjar and get download codes and download shit directly to your shit. So
we're pulling all of the plugs to the front of the show.
Yep.
Front loading the plugs.
Yeah. So I think that's pretty cool.
That actually does seem. I don't know. I mean, I know. Like everyone does that with Steam, and it seems work pretty well. Mm-hmm. So I could see this being a big plus. Does Xbox Store or whatever they call it? Do they anything like that?
Last I checked, you could buy codes for the Xbox 360. Like the last year of Xbox Live Gold that I ever bought was through Amazon. You know, you just get that, and then it gives you the code to enter into your machine. It'd be nice if there was like automatic, integration. Just like I hit this and it's linked to my account, and then it goes through. I see no reason why that cannot be, but as it stands, you have to type away at that stupid on-screen keyboard.
At least for me, my biggest complaint with the PlayStation Store, I imagine maybe Xbox is like this as well, is I haven't been able to find a easy way to search it on anything that isn't a PlayStation.
Right.
So like, there's a lot of times where like it'll be like, you know, say middle of the day on a Friday. Well, previously at work, now at class, and you know, it's like I want to play something, you know, this week, and what's say $10, and I don't know.
Yeah, the PSN web interface is hot garbage.
Yeah, it's bad.
Yeah,
and in fact, it's one of the reasons I was like, ooh, you can buy stuff on Amazon. That means I won't have to open the PlayStation Store.
Yeah. And like, you can't say enough about like a trusted service that already has your credit card. on it that you can just like buy something from literally anywhere. Like, that's what's cool about Steam. That's what's great about Amazon. Like, God knows they should take my Instant Buy away from me on Amazon. and the same thing is true, like, on like iTunes. Once you get somebody locked into that convenience, it's really, really nice. That and Amazon is like, I you know, Amazon is more aggressive with sales than PSN is. Like, I've never seen a sale on PSN. Like, I know that they just straight up give stuff away most of the time, but they're kind of stingy, and I generally think to go to Amazon to check on sales more than I think to turn on my PlayStation, because when I turn on my PlayStation, I'm in the mood to game, you know.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. PlayStation sales tend to be really, really bad. They tend to forget about games. So whereas like on Steam, you know, games that are like 3-4 years old, you know, will just keep up in price until they're like, you know, $3.
Yeah. Yeah. To like basically enough to cover bandwidth.
Right. The PlayStation tends to, I've noticed, the store that shall not be named also has this problem. They tend to eventually just kind of give up. It's like, yep, not going below 20.
Yeah. But, you know, that's good. I like that.
Yeah. Yeah. This seems really cool.
DuckP.tv/tipjar. Yeah. I'm sorry. That's crass. I know it's crass.
What was that? What just happened?
I don't know. I think there's a, just if you go to duckfeed.tv. No, I'm serious. I feel bad about that. Let's not continue doing that. But anyway, who else has a story that they would like to present to us? Dennis, how about you?
Yeah, I was going to say I can go. I never know the right amount of time to wait before volunteering my story.
You know what? If I was an assertive host, I would just say, Dennis, go ahead. But I don't want to, if somebody's like champing at the bit, raring to go, I don't want to make them interject. So.
Right. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. I don't want to step on anyone's toes if they got something good, but it's also, you know, I don't want to make it sound like I fell asleep either. So.
Yeah, true.
Well, I think what we need to do is just consult Podcasting for Dummies to see what is the appropriate amount.
Let me see here. This is a picture of some. Yep. No. Okay. So just do a flip through and see if there's a picture of a guy with like crazy hair and he looks distressed, and then see if it talks about interjecting or volunteering.
Yes. This one says, "Stop being a pussy and read your story."
Yeah, so. Yeah. This one says, "Really, the only solution to this is to continue talking about it instead of going on with your goddamn show." So, so let's do that.
Yeah, all the review embargoes on PlayStation 4 were lifted today, which is the day we record. So by now it's old news. But one thing I thought was interesting was Knack, the kind of first party game that was supposed to be this, you know, platformer that would be the Jack or the Ratchet and Clank or the Crash Bandicoot or the Spyro of the next generation, has kind of fallen flat on its face. Number review scores aside, because we talked last week about how those are crap, it just seems like there's a really creative idea that could be used a lot of different interesting ways, and it's completely put on rails and completely played safe. Which is sad to hear.
Can you tell me what the gimmick of it is? Because it just kind of looked like a mascot platformer to me.
Yeah, the gimmick is that your character can grow in orders of magnitude by like kind of collecting the stuff around him, and he becomes this almost cobbled together monster of all the trash and relics and random stuff around him, and then at any time you can kind of drop those and be small again. So it's about managing your scale of being big enough that you can, or at least in theory, big enough that you can kind of fight the bad guys or stomp over enemy tanks, and then being small enough to sneak in and grab the MacGuffin that you need.
Right.
However, so, you know, there's a lot of interesting things that could happen there with managing your size versus what you want to do. But instead they've turned it into, okay, this is the section where you're big. And this is the section where you're small, and you can't be small in the big section or big in the small section, because you just literally won't be able to proceed. So there's no point in being able to manage that size, because you always have to be the exact size that the developer wants you to be.
Mm-hmm. Size matters.
Yeah, so it's a really interesting idea. And, you know, and part of the interesting thing was, depending on what you picked up to grow your size, you're like a robot version of a Katamari. That'd be the easiest way to
Robo Katamari.
Yeah. Is that some kind of boat, like a schooner?
Katamari Damacy?
Okay. The way you said it made it sound like catamaran.
Oh.
Yeah.
Katamari?
Yeah. Yeah.
No, it sounds like a squid.
So you know what this reminds me of, right?
Yeah.
Cameo.
Never heard of it.
It was an Xbox 360 launch game developed by Rare. Was a similar kind of mascot platformer kind of deal, aimed at similar audiences and kind of an undercover tech demo for various things. You know, the idea in Cameo was that you could switch from element to element in order to solve different puzzles. But this feels like deja vu of that to me.
See,
it was also really, really panned by critics and audience as well. It like only sold because there was a dearth of other options.
Yeah, which is the story of launch titles, right?
Yeah.
See, it strikes me as a little weird though, because you know when I think of the kind of mascot platformers. Excuse me, I'm sorry.
Plot farmers.
Sometimes I accidentally speak truth. The mascot platformers, you know, kind of like the one Seth mentioned, you know, most of those are very simple games that are just, you know, tend to be kind of fun and, you know, have you know, likable characters and backstories.
Whereas hard this to mess up.
Huh?
Hard to mess up.
Yeah, yeah. And I mean, I feel like that sounds like I'm like, dog-hound, but like the Jax games, they're fairly simple, but they were really good games. But I feel like this almost, I couldn't see it being that simply because it's, you know, sounds like it, you know, even if it worked, it would have been too complex to really be that, if that makes sense.
Yeah, like I think what they wanted to do was kind of counter to it being being that kind of simple game, and they tried to accommodate for that by putting everything completely on rails and not giving you the options to use the good ideas that they had. And they either needed to simplify it down and okay, it can stay on rails, but you know, it's going to be really good stuff on rails, or they need to actually give you the space to play with these mechanics.
Sure.
They shouldn't give you an interesting mechanic and then no room to play with it.
I think that like a big part of this is that platformers, and especially puzzle platformers, have become the domain of indies now.
Yeah, oh, that's a good point.
Like,
yeah.
And just the idea of like trying to make this banner, you know, let's recapture the mascot platformer days of the 90s, just falls flat. You know, because they're trying to apply big budgets to something that it's been proven, at least somewhat, doesn't require a big budget to be successful or engaging.
Yeah, maybe a bit of death by focus group.
Oh, most assuredly. Like, yeah. So
yeah.
Huh. Yeah. So I just put here in the notes "knack panned," which is just a funny,
yeah,
a funny phrase.
I bring it up as a sad thing. Knack in a pan. I bring it up almost as a sad thing because it was kind of a statement to me that they touted Knack so heavily because it's like, hey, we're not all gritty brown, you know, next gen futuristic graphics. Here's something that's essentially playing a Pixar movie. And I thought that was a wonderful idea and showed that the next gen was more than just a graphics upgrade, and they botched it.
Yeah.
Which is sad.
And just the entire launch lineup feels a little bit like deja vu or flashback to the previous generation, at least the 360 launch, where you have the shitty platformer, Knack and Cameo. You have a, you know, Call of Duty game, Call of Duty 2, and then Call of Duty Ghosts. You've got bog
Ghost
standard driving
God.
Game, you know, Project Gotham, and then whatever that Drive Club
Forza.
Or whatever it is, or Forza, or just like, you know, whichever one is like multi-platform, right? Like, really, the only thing that it's missing is the fucking awesome survival horror game. Like, there's no Condemned analog, but like, there's even the shitty licensed platformer in Killzone 4 or whatever, not platformer but shooter, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, it's it just it. I don't know. It's like it feels exactly the same.
Well, it's one of those things where I feel like there, it's a very small number of games that are actually good that come out at launch, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, I would say...
Smash Bros.
Smash Brothers was not a launch game for either system.
What, the...
that's a Native American champ. What?
For the GameCube it was, or at least it was real early.
It was 2002, and the GameCube came out in 2001.
Really?
Yep.
I thought it was much earlier. Okay, fair enough.
I swear.
I would not bullshit you.
Son of a bitch. Yeah, it was. It was pretty much right after the. Yeah, so it was December 3rd, 2001. Whereas the GameCube came out
November 18th, 2001.
Yes, sir. Yeah. So I was mistaken, but it wasn't a launch game. It was a launch window.
Okay. I will give you that, I think.
Oh, wait, so I apologize.
A window.
I am
September 14th in America, November 18th in Japan. Excuse me.
September? I thought it was November.
September in America.
They actually have the month switched in Japan.
Yeah, no, it was November in America. You have that backward, actually.
Oh, yeah, never mind.
Yeah, September in Japan, November in America, because I remember the Xbox and the oh man, GameCube came out within a week of each other. Yeah. I don't know. Consoles. Weird. By the time the next episode's out, I believe that the 360, or sorry, Xbox One, the One will be out.
The Y box.
I guess.
Yeah.
I don't know. I'm kind of considering buying a PlayStation 4 controller, but I know that's just absurd because... Like, I already have an Xbox controller for my computer, and then I would use the PlayStation 4 one. And exactly. So, I don't know. Hey, David, how about you? Do you got a story?
Sort of.
Okay.
With the COD Ghost game, you know, one of the big things, at least for PC gamers, although it came out, it was a... feature point for all of them was that dedicated servers were now going to be a thing again on all systems.
Okay.
The only problem is that apparently there aren't actually any dedicated servers,
even on PC.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Apparently, it's unclear either they've It's unclear they've either not launched any dedicated servers or have just launched such a minuscule number that it's completely irrelevant.
So my understanding is that, you know, especially on PC, the big thing about dedicated servers is that people want to be able to host their own so they can have as much control over them as possible. And the notion of, like, Activision hosted dedicated servers, like those have always been in relatively short supply. The idea wasn't so much that, like, Activision, you know, people were not angry that Activision wasn't hosting their servers. They were angry that Activision was taking away people's ability to host their own servers.
It's a dual thing, and part of this has just been Activision being asinine in terms of, like, particularly with, I believe, 3, where they pulled a thing where they said, you know, oh yeah, we'll put in dedicated servers, we're just going to, you know, control them in every way and, you know, not give you any of the features. So that is true to a certain degree. The other big problem with it, though, is if you don't have a dedicated server, you have really bad lag, where the person who is hosting has no lag.
Right, right.
And then the other people have a lot of lag. The other big thing is if the guy hosting it quits the game, then it has to migrate to a different host and the gameplay stops until it does.
Yeah.
And that's apparently the big problem people are seeing right now, is that's at least ideally wasn't supposed to be a thing on this version.
Mm-hmm.
And now it is, and it's, I don't know, it's interesting. They're kind of backpedaling, and, you know, they always said it was going to be, you know, part dedicated server and part, I guess, hosting. And they're saying it was kind of like switch on the fly and stuff. But I don't know. It's sort of coming across like maybe that was somewhat deceptive advertising.
Hmm.
So
I don't know. I mean, I think it all comes back to them wanting to control the matchmaking, but that is neither here nor there.
Yeah,
and I mean, to the people who the people who this really matters to are not going to hear that. Like, they're, you know, it's going to be like, oh, well, we shouldn't sacrifice X, Y, and Z, you know, just because Activision wants control over you know, the ability to, you know, to determine who you get to play with, right?
Yeah, I'd say there's three main points. There's one, Activision's an
enumerate
idiot
them,
and
please.
Well, there's one, Activision's an idiot and wants to control matchmaking. The other is the performance issue. But I think the third thing is just you can't promise a feature and then not give it to people.
Yeah, that's a big thing. Like, they need to manage the narrative, I think, and Activision has been just always bad at that.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
I don't know. But yeah, I mean, it's weird when they took away all dedicated server hosting, it was all I ever heard about. And then when they added it, I've heard not a peep. And I
see, the problem is they haven't really added.
Well, I guess they've returned the ability to do it, I guess. Like,
they haven't. Right. The problem is, it goes back to them kind of being asinine.
So why are we talking about it? It's just that they've, I don't know. Yeah.
I mean, no, the main issue for this story is just the fact that they promised something and then
I thought you were speaking in the past. Yeah. Huh.
Yeah. I mean, that's the news story. The other thing's just them making bad games.
Right. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. So that's we'll see how that bears out. I mean, I don't expect much of anything to happen. I think everybody's just trying to hold their shit together. Like, everything is about these fucking systems. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. How about you, Ben? You got a story for us?
I do, but I do want to comment on the fact that, like, I just really am indifferent about the new consoles. Like,
yeah.
I don't know. Whatever. Got to talk about something, I guess.
It's hard, yeah.
But anyway, well, like, because, I mean, how many other things are like that where it's like they're not excited when they first, or they're not like that neat when they first come out, but like about a year or two in, they start getting good, and then like 3 or 4 or 5 years, they start getting really, really good, you know?
I think that's true of like a lot of tech, like, and especially tech. Like, just when first new thing comes out, it's all about the potential, and then the excitement comes when that's filled in. And I think that they're, you know, they're like, if somebody is not an early adopter and they have a pragmatic streak inside of them, then the real excitement is actually seeing A, that it happens, or B, that it, you know, will happen.
Yeah, I mean, I guess I'm comparing it to other forms of media in my head, like movies or television, you know.
Oh yeah, but I mean, like, we're talking about platforms or, you know, specific. These are appliances, right? It's kind of like, okay, so we have this refrigerator, you know, like right now it only hold, you know, like right now it'll only make ice cubes, and then eventually you'll be able to put like meat in it, and then you know, like every other carton of milk that you put in here will not go bad.
Mm-hmm. Holding meat is a day one patch, actually. Just rejects it.
I feel like the NSA.
Wow.
Yeah.
I feel like, though, it seems like in this one, though, the jump in quality isn't enough to really make it exciting. If that makes sense.
Hmm.
Like, I feel like none of them have made a convincing argument even for their potential.
Well, I mean, I think that, not to be the person who, like, says, well, let's take the long view on this, but, like, if you compare, you know, God of War 2 to the PlayStation 3 launch games or whatever, like, you know, the like you we're making comparisons about stuff that is being done once the current technology is mastered, as compared to stuff that is being put out where people have no idea what they're doing almost.
Yeah, I guess I mean, what I'm saying though is like, say like when like the Nintendo 64 came out, granted, I really didn't game there, but I feel like at that point, but I feel like I could look at that and be like, oh, with this new system, they will be able to at some point make a really awesome Zelda game. And I like Zelda.
Right.
And, you know, the same way with the next couple. Whereas this one, I feel like, you know, I look at the... Granted, Nintendo's kind of a bad bad analogy because they haven't really gone with the same development thing. But I feel like, you know, I would look at it and say, like, oh, with this system, they can make basically the same game I would have played on the previous system. It'll just look nicer and maybe have a couple more guys on the
right.
screen.
So I think that making comparison, like the jump from 16 to 32 bit, that is actually kind of a disingenuous argument to make. I'm not calling you disingenuous,
but
like the idea of going from 2D to like 2D to 3D, it's like, yeah, obviously that's a huge thing because it is the most obvious like graphical jump we've ever seen, because that had a huge effect on the way games were done. And by that metric, that means that nothing since 1996 has been worthwhile.
See, but what I'm saying is, I feel like each of them, you know, after that, I feel like the, you know, say like PlayStation 1 to PlayStation 2 was sort of like, you know, this was, we can do 3D versus now we can do 3D really well. And right. I guess I feel like each console cycle has been less of a significant improvement over the previous one, mm-hmm. practically, and therefore I feel like this is kind of, at least to me, the tipping point where it's now been, you know, so much less of an improvement that doesn't matter as much.
So looking at this here, so I just think that, like, if you want to boil it down to, you know, tech, like in a pure, you know, like in a pure and simple way, the PlayStation 3 has 256 megs of RAM. That is fucking nuts, right? Whereas the PlayStation 4 has 8 gigabytes, so that is a 16-fold increase, which is crazy. So this isn't to say that like the horsepower behind it is enough to make it exciting. Like, I can get excited about that on an intellectual level, but like, I've ceased being excited because I don't see anything right away that tickles my fancy in a way that like Watch Dogs does, where I see stuff that like from a processing standpoint couldn't be done on the machines that I have in my house right now. Just the sheer amount of stuff that it's taking care of, you know, that it's keeping track of, that, you know, blah, 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 on and on down the line. And that stuff isn't necessarily graphical. Yeah, they have to be able to push that many number of things on the screen. But like the comparison that I make, and, you know, I apologize if anybody's listening who's heard me make this argument over and over again. But, you know, if you look at, you know, the jump from Xbox, the original Xbox rather, to the Xbox 360, that didn't get too terribly exciting. Like, yeah, there was like shadows and lighting and shaders, but they were pretty good looking games. They did Doom 3 on Xbox for Christ's sake. But like the thing that was like, oh wow, we can do a different kind of game on this new generation of hardware. And by this reasoning, like, oh, you know, the 360 wasn't a huge jump over the PlayStation, or over the Xbox, or the PlayStation 3 wasn't a huge jump over that. But like the number of things they were able to put on the screen in Dead Rising, that was like, oh, this completely justifies the tech. Somebody just decided to make a game that leveraged that. And whether that killer feature is online play or any number of these other things that just like I can't foresee because it's not like put up there in the like in the front and center, that, you know, tempers my skepticism to a certain extent and says, all right, you know, I'll hear any number of like glorious PC Master Race kind of argument that can come out like, oh, they've been doing this forever, blah, blah, blah. But like just that this is coming out and being standardized and put in as many people as possible, that advances, you know, the mainstream of whatever's out there, the mainstream of whatever games are being put forward, and thus kind of raises the bar. When the mainstream gets better, the, you know, the indie or the fringe or whatever gets better to outpace it, and that just helps everybody.
True. Yeah. Although, I feel like, you know, you bring up the PC stuff, and I feel like outside of the PC Master Race stuff, I do feel like maybe part of it is some of the, specifically with this advance, the type of things they're advancing on the platform have been things that have been traditional strengths of PCs, like having a decent amount of RAM. Mm-hmm. So I wonder if maybe that's also part of it, is that the type of change they're making is more similar to the PC than normal, if that makes sense.
Yeah, that makes sense. And I think that just, you know, the bigger problem here, and I would like to move on from this if possible, but like the bigger problem, and I think we can all agree, is that like there's a day of reckoning coming when the when budgets just completely outstrip the ability for a game to earn something. And that is something that is one area where you can, you know, without reservation say, oh, this model of thinking about games is hurting people, because it does kind of have the stultifying effect on like, you know, on risk and the risk that people are willing to take. And when you put, you know, these graphics cards and all this horsepower inside of it, there is a there's a notion to match, you know, like to participate in this fidelity arms race that necessarily drives up the cost of art assets. You know, pursuing fidelity and, you know, instead of something that is cheaper, which is just insight, cheaper but less common, which is like, how do we make this thing look good versus how do we make this thing look, you know, next gen, right? And that is bad for the business as a whole.
Yeah.
I'm sorry.
That was very, very accurate, summary, yet depressing.
In summary, we'll just have to see about this next generation.
Yeah. No, there are these boxes. I hear you go to store, and you go to store.
Go to store. Yes. Family love Michael.
Who's Michael?
No, it's Arrested Development.
Oh, okay. There we go. Oh, man.
Damn next gens with
Did you have
six gigabyte? Sorry.
Did you have a story, Ben, or were you just trying to throw a smoke screen down?
No, I actually have a story, but okay. Sorry for the segue. It's not even a segue. That's for fine. The off-track topic.
No, it was you were just like latching onto the previous one. You latched on, and then I just stepped all over you. So
it's amazing how long you can talk about something that you're saying that it's not interesting.
I mean, oh man,
silence.
Go ahead, Ben.
So I followed my other week's stories. It's another Grand Theft Auto story, despite the game having been out for 2 months now or so. But I guess 1 month, maybe. Anyway, they are releasing an expansion to the multiplayer that adds new features. It's called a Beach Bum expansion.
Right.
But it's a free expansion, which is interesting. But it's not that interesting, so I don't even know why I'm sharing the story. Maybe just
we'll talk about it for a while if that's any indication. Right.
Yeah. No, just say it's the most fascinating thing since like Oscar Wilde, and then that way we will
move on promptly. Yes. Yeah.
Yeah. So like what is it? Like these multiplayer only expansion kind of things never really interest me because it's like a new skin. Like maybe this guy has surfer trunks.
Yeah, and it's about as frivolous of an expansion. Like there's a new deathmatch map. There's you can now do bike races, but you could do that before on the previous one. Mm-hmm. So I don't know why that's being promoted, I guess. Maybe so perhaps it's just a new bike race. But yeah, so there's no new game format there. It's just new maps, essentially.
Right.
But yeah, so this just kind of dovetails onto my further disappointment with the game. Single player is great. Everyone should play the single player. Mm-hmm. But like every other aspect, it seems like they kind of botched a little bit, or they kind of took half measures.
Here's my question. When you're doing a bike race, do they play Bicycle Race by Queen?
Yes,
they don't, but they should.
Yeah, no, like that would make it all worthwhile. I would pay for this free thing.
Wait, did you say it's called Bicycle Race by Queen?
Yeah,
isn't it just bicycle?
I think it's Bicycle Race.
The internet's
Google.
Furiously Googling. Yep, Bicycle Race.
Oh.
Bicycle Race is a single by English rock band Queen. Yeah. God, rock and roll used to be fun.
Freddie Mercury is awesome. Anyway, but yeah, I don't know. Whatever. God, just disappointed.
This cover for Bicycle Race is kind of doing it for me.
We talked about how a new game isn't that great. The new console generation isn't that great. The server promises that it made weren't really fulfilled, and the new GTA 5 expansion kind of sucks.
But this scantily clad topless woman driving away.
Scantily clad topless, isn't that kind of
I'm gonna describe the so it's a double single by Queen with Bicycle Race and Fat Bottom Girls. There's a lady wearing a jaunty hat. She is riding a bike away from the camera. There's no evidence of a top. There's very little exposure of the breasts happening, and she has a very skimpy I believe like underwear or like bathing suit bottom on that is revealing just a little bit of I would crassly refer to as an ass crack. And then she's also wearing sneakers and socks, riding this bike away from the camera.
Don't stop. I'm not finished yet.
I was scientifically describing a 70s rock single cover, saying like, oh, I appreciate this on some kind of level. And then you might have made it dirty. Oh, well. That's a good song, though. Yeah, I saw that, but like the second that I saw that it was multiplayer, I was like, meh. And then
I was kind of hoping they would eventually release the multiplayer separate, because that's the only part I'm at all really interested in.
Even after hearing everything Ben said about it?
I did say I was very interested, but I'm more interested than the single player, I guess.
Interesting.
Yeah, it'll be released on PC eventually.
So, silver lining, they apparently released the iFruit app a few days ago for Android, but that's like a silver lining on a dark cloud that they had a game feature that was not available for 2 months if you had an Android phone instead of an Apple phone.
Might have been a message. I don't believe that. Don't worry.
I feel like it would be... So, I mean, it is the iFruit, so I feel like that's at least somewhat appropriate.
Well, yeah, because it is directly a parody of an iPhone by
right,
Apple.
Exactly,
so,
exactly.
Like, not even, like, a good one.
The Grind.
Now it's time for The Grind, where we talk about the games that we have been playing. And the break, Ben, you have expressed interest in starting the thing off.
To try and uplift spirits, I had some slight good news this week as opposed to bad news.
Yeah,
yeah, it's, sure. I'm not going to lift your spirits too high. All right, you can go to a therapist or something.
Half acre by half acre, right?
Yeah. So I've been playing more of Batman this week.
Okie doke.
And it's gotten a little bit better. It's gotten a little bit better. It still has like not a whole lot of originality to it. A lot of the mechanics are kind of carbon copied from previous games, but they introduced a villain in a very well done way. And so some of the narrative elements that they've developed have been very good. And so that is a silver lining.
Mm-hmm. When it strikes me that, you know, for a first game that's so popular from a new developer, like if they make a decent derivative game, maybe that will then allow them to make a more ambitious game next time. Does that make sense?
Who are you talking about?
Probably whoever. I don't mean to speak for you, but whoever is developing Arkham Origins.
Right. Is that a new developer?
It's WB Montreal, so I don't know what else they've done.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, super. That's why. Okay. Well, I mean, when I say new, I mean not the same developer as the previous ones.
Yeah. All right. Sorry. Yeah. I just wanted to make sure that was.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm just saying, like, when I feel like, you know, maybe if they are successful in making a, you know, a fairly derivative but still good one, maybe that'll allow them to then the next one, you know, be more creative.
Yeah.
Right.
Perhaps so.
Yeah.
We'll
so,
see.
So, you know, have they kind of outstripped the moveset in, you know, City, or are they still sticking with kind of the same gadgets that they had there? Because I gotta say, I love me some gadgets.
Yeah, so you continue to get new gadgets. Some of them are different names, but essentially the same thing as previous gadgets. Some of them are new, and there has been one improved mechanic. So I don't know if revealing a gadget is a spoiler or not. So what do you guys think about that?
I think that's fine. Like, especially since we've said all along that, you know, everything is the same. If something breaks that, you know.
Okay.
Yeah.
So if for anyone listening, if they don't want to know about a gadget you get halfway through the game, then over skip this for the next minute or so. One of the gadgets is you take from one of the assassins is these electric gloves, and the person's essentially like Electrode from Spider-Man, but you know here,
but here,
yeah, in Arkham, whatever. But the cool thing about them is you have like a meter when you're fighting people, and it's it builds up with every like successful hit that you land on somebody, and then slowly degrades if you don't do anything. And so the point is like maybe a minute into a fight that you have, it'll go off similar to like the Kratos thing in God of War, his like overcharge move or whatever. And so you even press the same buttons. You press the right and left thumbstick to activate it, and you turn on the electric gloves, and then like every time you punch somebody, it does a lot more damage and pretty much takes them out. So
I will punch you with lightning.
Yeah, dude. And it's great because like if you do the finishing move where he like leans over and punches them in the face, if you have the electric gloves on, you'll punch them in the face and electrocute their face. It's not like graphic or anything, but it's like it ups the satisfaction level. So
keep in mind, like he does not kill anybody.
Yes.
That's I feel like they're really stretching the whole not killing people thing.
it's been a joke forever, though. He doesn't kill people. He just hospitalizes them for life.
Yeah. Just makes them drink through a straw. Yeah. So there have been some slight improvements that with the game. So I've been happy about that.
Any particularly good boss fights? You don't have to say who or what any of them are. I just want to know, like, is there anything approaching like the Mr. Freeze or Penguin fights in terms of
not
quality?
Yeah. So I would say the Mr. Freeze fight is probably the best boss fight in the Batman game so far.
Oh God, yeah, yeah.
Nothing has reached that level. And yeah, in general, there hasn't been any boss fight that has been that remarkable. Either they've been kind of like phoned in, or they've been very similar to previous boss fights in the other previous two games that it hasn't been, you know, I guess original enough to be fun. Mm-hmm.
Any playing Toro?
Toro.
You know, where it's kind of like you have a big lumbering enemy and you have to lure him into chasing you, but you move out of the way at the last minute so he can run into a wall. It's kind of like you did with Bane and any of the other Venom enemies in Arkham Asylum, especially.
At least once in every game that's had a boss ever.
Yeah. Yeah. Including Ninja Gaiden 2, which is crazy. I'm talking for the NES as well. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So, I mean, they recycle some of their assets. So, yeah, they do have, like, the big guys that you can, jump over, do whatever. But they're not, like, boss fights devoted to that sort of mechanic since that's already been done. So that's at least good.
Yeah.
But also going back to the electric gloves, the cool thing about them is they break through a lot of different defenses. So, like you can punch a person with a shield and it'll break through their defense where typically you have to do a special move to get past them.
Right. What that sounds like is it rewards you in a tangible way for keeping your combo up.
Yeah, essentially. Yeah.
Yeah. Like, you know, instead of just having points, like I never paid a lot of attention in the Arkham games to my combo meter. It's kind of like, oh, that number is real high. Nice. But,
yeah,
you know, yeah.
Well, doesn't the combo meter allow you to do like your instant takedowns or whatever, where you just like break people?
Yeah, if you get it up to like 8 or 12, you can start unlocking moves, but you can only do the move once. Unless you upgrade it, you can do it twice. So, yeah.
Yeah.
So,
well, I'm happy to hear that you're starting to come around on it.
Yeah,
starting, you know.
Yeah. Just a small glimmer of hope. We'll see. So anyway, I'll report back later on more with that.
Yeah. How about anything else?
That's all I've got so far. I actually have not even touched Grand Theft Auto Online, so. Sad day.
Apparently not, understanding the quality of it, so.
Yeah, it's like, oh, I saved myself not having to pay attention to something that's butt.
Let David do that work for you.
Yeah. Yeah. So, David, how about you?
Sure. Well, kind of related, I picked up Batman Arkham City on the Humble Bundle.
Oh yeah.
I've played like hardly any of it. Hardly any of it.
Have you played Asylum?
I played partially through Asylum. I didn't get that far.
I would heartily recommend that you play Asylum.
Likewise.
Oh, really? Before playing the others?
Yeah, it's only about a 10-hour game.
It
sets stuff up. Like,
Get it in the same bundle?
I actually had it before. I just...
Yeah, Asylum is choice nuggets. It's real.
Okay.
That's one I can vouch for. I'm generally Arkham game illiterate, but Asylum is worth your time.
Yeah.
Okay. Very cool.
Also choice nuggets.
All I can say right now of this is just being Batman is pretty cool.
Oh yeah.
Except for the whole dead parents thing.
Except for the whole being a psychopath thing. Yeah.
You know.
I just feel like Batman needs to be taken down a peg.
But
that he need to be reminded of that.
Yeah. Keeps him hungry.
good job on the recent surge in the Wayne Industries stock prices, Bruce. Yeah. So how your I've been
too bad it won't bring your parents back, Bruce.
Wow. Oh man.
So most of my time actually two things on the PlayStation for a change. On PlayStation Plus, they added
Ico.
So I've started playing that. I'm just at the first point where all of a sudden the enemies can fly.
Yeah.
So that's like really early on. But
have you played it before?
No, actually.
Oh, good. Okay, great. Cool.
Yep.
So it's obviously in something that will surprise no one. It's really, really good.
Yeah.
I like, at least so far, the way the narrative is told or not told. I'm incredibly fascinated by the fact that there's a game that's apparently going to make a decent escort quest.
Right.
Yeah.
The one thing I have noticed though is that the holding the animation for holding hands, particularly when you're running, doesn't quite work.
Really? Because I thought that was like one of the best things was the way that it managed like the distance between you and the, you know, just the tension between you outrunning her and her catching up and then running back. Like, that felt really good to me.
Well, to be fair, like, I think in terms of like as a technical thing, like, yeah, I think it works really well. I like the fact that like if you're just walking and then you just like take off running, you'll just kind of like yank her along for a moment, stuff like that. It's more just like, particularly when you're cornering and stuff, you kind of get Slender Man arms.
Yeah. Funny thing about that, like all of the animation. Okay, let me rephrase this in a better way. None of the animation was mocap. Like all of it is keyframed. That's so like, that, like that is somebody's conception of how people move, and it is like, you know, any kind of like realism is like, yeah, you know, we did this for effect, which right. makes and, it feel and, like, overall, like dirty actually, as opposed to being real sterile. Yeah,
right. And overall, it's really good. The one other thing is I hate their camera controls. The camera controls are awful.
Yeah, it's a little bit, yeah, it took them a little bit to get that. Like 3D cameras were not at all mastered by 2001.
I mean, it's an old game.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'm curious.
I guess I feel like it speaks to it in that I wouldn't care about the camera controls if I wasn't constantly trying to look at the scenery.
Yeah.
So I feel like it's one of those things where it's a problem because it's so good.
Yeah. That is a good HD remake too. Like it is it is gorgeous.
I think the funniest thing though is I think I'm getting at least as much enjoyment from the cover art for the game as I am from the game itself.
Yeah, the cover art's pretty bad.
Oh, really? I think it's amazing.
Oh,
it's
okay, iconic, okay. So they may have fixed it like that. Like the original PS2 cover art is some of the worst cover art ever. Actually,
it's got like the Don Quixote kind of.
Well, like okay, so the cover art, are you talking about like the one where it's like a really pulled out high shot of him of Ico and Yorda running underneath the windmill, or is it the one where it's like the really bad Photoshop with the gradients and like the maybe just a little bit too detailed character models like looking into the camera?
I'm talking about the Renaissance painting one.
Oh,
Yeah,
that is fantastic. That is some of the most gorgeous box art ever. That's the Japanese one. The American PS2 box art is just again hot garbage. So
yeah, I'm trying to track down
like a print.
Yeah, like a print of it or something like that. Like I really, it's really really good.
Yeah.
So
neat.
Yeah, so I'm really enjoying this. The speech in the game, I like the whole is it the same as like I know in Shadow of the Colossus they just speak like Moon Man language. I mean is it the same here, like none of the dialogue is actually any language?
Yeah, it is a made up language. Yorda's subtitles initially they were supposed to be translatable. Like right now they are just kind of moonspeak, you know, in terms of just being symbols. That feature was cut, so right now it is just entirely inscrutable. I think
it's better that way.
Yeah I'd rather it be that way too. Just tell it through subtlety and environment. That is what I want.
I do really like, I don't know, that if you try to get her to do something she can't, she'll just walk over and just say whatever her word for no is. I know that just struck me as like a really nice touch, particularly considering that other than that she's mute.
Right. Ben, yeah. you played Ico, right?
Only a little bit. Okay. Yeah. I did not play.
I feel like I lent it to you at some point.
You did?
Yeah.
I guess I did not progress through it fast enough and you asked for it back. And so
did I? Huh. I feel bad if that's the case.
It's all right.
Yeah.
But yeah.
Well.
I was going to say, I know, Dave, that you don't like, you know, that gap between figuring out what you're supposed to do and actually being able to do it. And I'm wondering, you know, now that you're going back to it, does Ico have that problem? Like once you figure out what you're supposed to do, is it relatively easy to execute, or, you know, are you getting frustrated with the way that the game handles? Sure.
I'm not noticing that too far for the most part. The main things I'm noticing a little bit sometimes, some of the puzzles, take a while to solve, just like in terms of raw time, just because you're running back and forth and pushing things and stuff. Mm-hmm. And I've noticed some of them where, like, I'll figure out a puzzle and then, lose a fight before I get to a save thing.
Oh.
Stuff like that. As a side note, I really like the save couch. I don't know why, but that really makes my day.
Because it looks like the least comfortable thing ever.
Yeah.
True, but I don't know. Just the fact that you save via the save couch, I don't know.
Yeah.
But so a little bit of that, although part of it is probably my like weird like trying not to run so that I don't dislocate the chick's shoulder. Or like trying not to run too free. I don't know. So part of that is probably my weird like inadvertently like trying to play the game. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
But no, I mean, so far it hasn't bothered me too much. It seems pretty good.
That might be one of my favorite games.
Yeah, like I said, so far it's really good.
So question, Cole, do you like it more or less than Shadow of the Colossus?
I think I like it more.
I think you'd be justified in that.
Yeah. Which, you know, it's one of those things. Like, do you ever have somebody just like come up to you and ask you like, hey, what's your favorite game?
Yeah. Like of all time, of this week.
Yeah.
What genre?
Exactly. So I don't need to go on my Seinfeldian rant about how absurd that is. But yeah, no, I just like if pressed to rank something, then I immediately get like, well, yeah, because someone is like, what did I play more recently? In this case, it was Eco. so like it might be because it's more fresh. Like what do I appreciate the ambition of more? Shadow of the Colossus. What do I appreciate the execution of more? Eco. Which is more viable to me? I don't know. How did I feel when I woke up this morning?
How do you rank them?
Hungover.
I had eggs for breakfast, so Shadow of the Colossus today. Yeah.
How do you rank them in comparison to The Last Guardian?
well,
Ben, come on.
They're going to exist, whereas The Last Guardian never will. So
that's heartbreaking.
Didn't they say for the launch event, there's some big thing happening on Spike TV, which first, but they said they were going to have like a major game reveal during the event, and immediately my mind went to please Last Guardian, please Last Guardian, please Last Guardian. Like, how awesome would that be? But
do you think that The Last Guardian would play for Spike? I mean, like, what are the odds that, like, just the average Spike viewer who isn't tuning in specifically for this event wouldn't say, what the fuck is this bullshit?
Hey, like, I like a lot of the stuff that's on Spike.
I was going to say, let's not get too stereotypical on that stuff. Like,
I like seeing people get punched in the face. I mean,
Just like someone would say, oh, hey, you know, a video game player would say the exact same thing about anything that is approaching art. You know, I agree that they probably lean more towards the bro audience, but if that's what Sony has shown throughout their reveal of PlayStation 4, that they are leaning in that direction. So I wouldn't credit Spike TV for doing that. I would put it in the realm of possibility that Sony could do something so savvy.
Right. Savvy in what regard? Like unexpected or?
Like knowing that is something that people would get excited about.
All that I know is I've never lost by underestimating the common man. So you might as well just
be on a shirt.
I'm going to put all my money on both red and black.
So. Oh, you guys, Last Guardian reimagined as a first person shooter. it's Sony's answer to Titanfall. You got the difference in scale and everything there, man. It's perfect.
Yeah. Man.
But yeah,
you mentioned a second game, David.
Yeah, also on the PlayStation Plus, they released Dragon's Dogma.
Oh yeah. Which is Dragon's Dogma plus Dark Arisen, so.
Right, yeah. Right. It's really interesting.
Yeah.
I don't know. Have you looked at it at all?
I own it.
Okay. Have you played it?
I don't even know what type of game it is.
So
what makes it kind of interesting is the game it's always compared to is Dark Souls, and to a certain degree Skyrim. Mm-hmm. And It's weird because like I can definitely see that it definitely has some Dark Souls like DNA. I would almost describe it as it's sort of like what Dark Souls would be if they decide to make Dark Souls a completely different game. But which
thank you.
But what I mean is like it's it has a lot of like, you know, it's has some similarity to Themation and Dark Souls in that, you know, it's you know, tries to be a much darker fantasy, you know, it's, you know, this open world, you know it has a lot of the Dark Souls DNA, but on the same time it's more similar to Skyrim in terms of like being a much more conventional like fantasy story in terms of like there being quests and, you know, actually being other characters that aren't trying to kill you. You know, it's a much more traditional storytelling style, mm-hmm. if that makes sense.
Yep.
Yeah.
The basic plot is that your character apparently dragons come every so often. And that's just a thing. And it comes and attacks your village. And whoever else is running your character tries to fight him off. And for some reason that maybe impresses the dragon. So he decides to eat your heart. Which causes you to then like gain superpowers.
I'm doing this because I respect you.
Yeah.
Yeah, so it's basically like the opposite of... Iron Fist, that allows you to apparently makes you good at, you know, being a fantasy hero, and allows you to one of the more interesting kind of storyline elements is there's these people called pawns, which are basically, you know, come from a different dimension and kind of are these people who don't really have any free will or, personality of their own. They just kind of, you know, appear and then, you know, will follow orders and fight for people.
Yeah.
And so
it's like Apple fans.
Huh?
Wow. It's like-
That's the implementation. That's the multiplayer implementation too, right?
Right, and the way it's implemented in this, since you're the Arisen, you're the, you know, chosen one. You can actually have them, you know, join up with you as companions. And the way it works is you design one pawn from the ground up. You know, you can change in depth. You know what they look like. What their behavior is, their equipment, their skills, their class. But then you can recruit two additional pawns, and the ones you recruit in addition are ones that are the primary pawn for someone else.
Right.
The character creation setting system's really, really one of the high points. You know, there's a lot of depth. You can give your characters two different color eyes.
Bowie.
What?
Like David Bowie.
Yes. You can make David Bowie. And I would encourage
Finally.
It. One of the features I really like is you can name your pawn, but then the way they do content control is if someone else, you also then choose from an extensive list of preset names. And so if someone else has parental controls on, they'll see the preset name, not what you named them.
Yeah.
Which is kind of a nice way of handling it. The other interesting thing is your height and weight actually affects gameplay.
How so?
So, if you are taller, you are, you know, have more reach in your attacks. However, you can't necessarily fit into certain places, you know, crawling through holes and stuff. And
it's like being Super Mario.
Right. And you're generally slower overall. Also, if you're taller, you can wade. Your light source, you basically, it's like a land, you attach to your belt. And so you can wade farther into water before your lantern goes out.
Huh.
And then the basically with weight, the heavier you are, generally, the more difficult you are to, you know, knock over, grapple, and things like that. But it's more difficult for you to climb and you're not as agile.
Right.
And then I guess going with the climb, I know I'm really going non-linear through my explanation of this game. The other interesting thing is they've kind of just grab-bagged in gameplay elements they like. So, like, one of the lead designers was also the lead designer for most of the Devil May Cry games.
Right.
So the moveset, it steals moves directly from Devil May Cry. Also, though, when you're fighting a large enemy, like a dragon, you can go Shadow of the Colossus style and, like, climb up it and, like, start stabbing it in the eyes.
Nice.
Hmm. Yeah. So
is it,
yeah,
like, pull out, like, puzzle, get up there type of deal, or is that just, like, a quick time event?
No, it's more, more of a, you know, how much stamina do you have and, like, trying to keep it from, like, just like slamming you into the ground or grabbing you or something like that. It's not the puzzle thing.
Right.
So it's kind of, it seems like it's more, they took a lot of different really, really, really good elements and kind of cut them down to their most basic, you know, essence and put them in.
Yeah.
So.
Huh. Yeah, I've been really excited about it, like, for a while, at least since it came out. Like, the demo did not make a very good showing, but that wasn't enough to dissuade me. When they put out the remake, not the remake, but the expanded edition, I was like, well, it's like $30. I'm going to buy it.
Right.
But
yeah, it's really good. Unfortunately, the controls were actually really bad. But I feel like the gameplay overcomes that, at least makes up for it at least enough that, you know, people should try it. But so yeah
neat. So let's see here. Dennis, I would like you to lead with something that is not Dark Souls, because I think we're going to tag team Dark Souls and that can be our segue.
Man. Yeah, sure. Is what's the, just so I know up front leading into it, what's the embargo, or what are we allowed to say? Is it free for all?
I think that let's not be too cavalier about saying what happens where, but, like, it's pretty quick to come out and say, you know, like, what it is. Yes, so I would say go ahead and talk about things. It is an open beta. Stuff that is on the level of what the boss is, I feel, is okay. And then just kind of, like, in general, talking about mechanics is fine.
Okay. So on our general level of don't spoil stuff, but not like, hey, this is a closed beta, let's not. Okay. Mm-hmm. I just wasn't sure and couldn't find real quick what was, if this was like a closed beta, don't tell anyone.
Yeah. And I get the sense that this is a relatively early area too. So.
Oh, okay. Okay, yeah. Cool. But I will not start with that.
Okay.
In fact, I won't even start with a game.
Oh, good.
I'm going to start with this system.
Oh, God.
I finally broke down and did it, y'all.
What'd you do?
I finally did it. I bought a PlayStation Vita.
You did? Oh, ooh. Wow.
I did.
That was who bought a PlayStation Vita.
Yeah. So good. It showed it up. I'm always super paranoid about using that link because there's no actual feedback that says, hey,
right,
it went through. So, like, anyway, yeah, that was me. I broke down. I found I had gift cards that got me over the amount. I found one used for a really, really good price, and I did it.
Nice. Did you pick anything up with it?
I did not, because of PlayStation Plus.
Okay.
I have a backlog. I have a backlog of probably 20 games that I have for free. Yeah, that I can go back through and play. Which actually created an interesting scenario, because while I got this actually right around the time that we were recording the last level, so it showed up, I forgot to mention that I'd ordered it, so it showed up like right after we recorded the last episode. So I've had it for a week now, and I've barely played it at all. And it's not of my own doing. It came in the mail nice and quickly, which was awesome. Got it and opened up. And of course, the first thing I realize is that I'm signed into the random other person who I bought it from's account.
And that seems like an advantage.
Yeah. Let's see, credit card information. No, so I'm like, okay, how do I sign out? And it was, I kind of had to look up the tutorial on how to sign it out, and then got that. And then it's like, okay, well, now I need to sign myself in. But first, I need to download an update for it, because I reformatted everything to get it back to factory condition, which means all the updates went away. So it's like, okay, I'm not going to be able to play it tonight. I got to download an update. I in general had a crazy busy week. So this is all like little extra pieces of time I found interspersed between real life. The update wouldn't download because I had problems with my internet connection. So I had to fiddle with that. Update downloaded. But then I found out that they had the parental control set. And so I needed the parental control code. So I had to email the guy and wait for him to send me the parental control code to reset that. Then it finally got the thing to turn on, which was monumental, and didn't have any games on it. So I had to go download all the games, but the internet was acting up again. So every time I tried to leave things to download overnight, it would, mess up, and I'd have to start it over. So then finally I got it set up and I got everything loaded on, and it was like the perfect storm of just things where I couldn't find any time to play it, but I have it. I own one now, and it's up and running now, and I've gotten to play a little bit of one or two games, but overall it's a pretty sleek piece of hardware. It fits real nice in your hand. The limited amount that I've played, the back touchscreen and the front touchscreen both work really well. The front touchscreen, I think, and the back are both multi-touch, so you can kind of use two fingers, and touch with one, drag with the other, and that opens up a lot of different play options. The screen is beautiful, high resolution, and just very, very pretty overall. It's very comfortable to play. The battery life is great, actually. Huh. I've charged it once, and again, granted that I haven't spent a ton of time playing games, but it was not the battery drainer that I thought it was going to be.
Yeah.
Nice.
Yeah. What else?
Does
what else?
It I still mean, have,
go ahead.
Does that still have the shifty thumbsticks?
No. I just answered your question. I'm sorry.
I'm not sure what that means.
So the PSP has it's not so much a thumbstick as a thumb disc. It protrudes out.
No.
So it actually is
these are legit.
A sticky
this is the
stick.
Real deal.
Yeah.
Oh, they're actually thumbsticks.
Actually thumbsticks, yeah. And nice. Those, again, in the limited amount I've played, those have worked really, really well. So that's absolutely, phenomenal. It's a little heavy to, play lying in bed, kind of holding above you. Your arms get a little bit tired. But that's kind of how I intend to use it, is kind of bedside reading.
Mm-hmm.
Or for any time I don't want to take up the entire living room with my gaming. I've played two games on it so far, and again, very limited amounts of both. But the first one is called Dakuro. I think I'm pronouncing that correctly. And it is about, got a lot in common with Ico, actually. So you're like a minion in an evil castle who decides that he kind of likes the princess that's being held captive, and you want to help her escape. The only problem is that she doesn't actually see you in your minion form. She just doesn't even notice you. And so in your minion form, you're a lot more mobile. You can, jump really high and knock enemies around and stuff. But in order to interact with her in any way, you need to change into this like prince form, mm-hmm. Which is significantly less mobile. And it's just a little puzzle platformer, and it's probably pretty apt to call it Ico in 2D. Mm-hmm. So, that's been fun. It's made limited use of the touchscreen controls. But you kind of double tap on either the front of the screen or the back of the screen to switch between. the two modes of Prince and Skeleton, and that's actually really comfortable and really natural, so well implemented there. Yeah. And we'll see if it does more with the touchscreen as we go on. I get the impression that it will. And then the other thing I've been playing is Star Wars Pinball, which is just a pinball simulation.
Right.
So it's a bunch of, I think it's three pinball tables. I've only played two of them. Where, you know, it's Zen pinball with a Star Wars skin, which is pretty cool. I absolutely love pinball. I think I said when I went out to Nevada that the Pinball Hall of Fame was by far the highlight of the trip. Ben, have you been back there?
I actually have not been back, but I'm probably going to take my brother and my dad there this weekend.
So. Oh, good. Yeah, we still have the bag of quarters from that trip. And I'm just waiting for someone to break into the house so I can use this bag full of quarters to knock them around. But anyway.
You know that you can use those quarters to buy a weapon, right?
Yeah. But I like the idea of it so much better. Okay. I beat you to death with the money you came for.
Right, Dante's in Inferno.
You want this? You want this? I'll give it to you.
Yeah. The really cool thing is, so you know, it's a 16:9 screen or whatever on the PlayStation, and if you turn it vertically, like you know, so it's kind of shaped like an iPhone, the screen will turn and it actually gives you a better view of the pinball table. Huh. And then you just tap on the right or the left side of the screen
for the flippers. Unable to control it.
Yeah. Okay. No, it's nice because you tap on the left or right side of the screen for the flippers, and then you bump around the right stick to like knock the table around. And it works really, really well. And it's an instance where the orientation and the touch controls, I think, make for a better experience. Just because that is a more natural way to view it. And it, you know, I didn't have any trouble playing with the touch controls versus the left and right trigger, which very much surprised me. So it's overall the quality of the touch controls is better than even what I've seen on an iPhone, where that's like all that it does.
Hmm.
Yeah.
Shout across your bow, Cole.
What bow? He owns an iPhone too. So
yeah. And I would hold up, you know, something like an Infinity Blade as an iPhone game that does touch controls incredibly well. But overall, like I've spent very limited time with the actual games, but I'm very happy with the system as a piece of hardware. When my internet is freaking working, it's very easy to connect it up to the PS3 and download games. And it's nice because you can kind of have a double duty if you're trying to download a lot, where you can download something on your PS Vita and download something on your PS3 at the same time, and then, you know, connect it up and take the thing from the PS3 over to the Vita.
Yeah.
So it was very, you know, again, barring network issues, it was very easy to load up.
Yeah.
And then the limited time I've played with the games, it's been, you know, the games are fun and the touchscreen controls are actually well implemented, which, again, I expected it to be a gimmick that I would largely ignore, and I would say that's probably the primary way that I've played the games so far.
Nice.
So that's,
that's
great.
Can you ignore it if you want to?
Yeah, so like the Decoro game, you can put the character changing on the bumper, on the right bumper instead of on touchscreen. But it's just so easy to tap the screen. Like it works really well. And then on the pinball game, you can just play with it in the regular orientation and use the bumpers as the flippers. Which again works fine, but you're kind of in a little bit more of a limited view of the table.
Yeah, pinball is so vertical. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. Pinball is very vertical that way.
Yeah.
So it's been really cool. And I could ramble more about the pinball tables, like since they aren't necessarily constrained by reality and they can have Boba Fett flying around the table and stuff like that, they do some cool things with the presentation, but the actual physics of the table stays very, very true to a pinball machine. So they take a lot of license. At time it can be distracting because there's so much going on.
Yeah.
But overall, it's just a very, very fun and very faithful pinball simulation, which I am a fan of. I'm very sad that the Space Cadet pinball or whatever it was that was all the old Windows machines.
Yeah.
Spent so much time on that. So much time on that. So this is bringing me back to those days.
Yeah.
So yeah, more to come on that, I am sure.
Yeah.
And I'm also, I'm very open if anyone listening has a Vita. I'm open to recommendations because right now I'm just playing through my, my PlayStation Plus library. But I know there are good games out there for the Vita. There have to be somewhere. So let me know.
The ones I'm interested on are the kind of some of the spin-offs of the popular games, like the, you know, the Uncharted one and the, especially the Assassin's Creed one.
Yeah, I have the Uncharted. I don't have Assassin's Creed. So I'll let you know how Uncharted it is eventually. I've got some travel coming up that will allow me to play with it further for a more dedicated period of time. So,
right.
But yeah, so that's my big one. Now let's get into some Dark Souls stuff.
Yeah, let's do this. So both Dennis and I participated in the beta here this past weekend. I would like to thank Dennis for reminding me that the beta was taking place that night. I was like getting ready to go to bed. I was like laying on my couch reading a book, like, ah, oh, I'm going to turn in early tonight. And you're like, are you ready? I was like, ready for what? And you're like, Dark Souls. I was like, wait, 2 a.m.? Fuck.
Yeah. So what? So I went to bed at, because it went 2 to 5 a.m. Yeah. For our time zone, which is brutal. especially just I hadn't been getting much sleep anyway, and it kind of snuck up on me too.
Yeah.
I had put it on my calendar, so that's why it popped up, and I had set the reminder early enough that it was still in the night. But I slept from 10:30 p.m. to like 1:45 a.m. Got up and played, and then slept from 5 until my normal wake up time. So
yeah,
I strategized crazy. That.
Yeah, I just slept until 2 the next day. So, as you do, but yeah, they did that. They were trying to stress test the servers because they are moving to a to a dedicated server model after attempting to do kind of an individual one with Dark Souls. I don't even.
So I got a question to start off.
Yeah, start us off.
How much time did you just spend reading item descriptions before anything in the game? Because that was a solid 15 minutes.
Yeah, 15 to 20 minutes. Like, just okay. So I started out with a dual swordsman, and I played dual swordsman throughout the entire thing because that struck me as being the most different.
Yeah.
However, like in reading stuff, like from Jeremy Greer, EC on YouTube, frequent guest on Fireside Chat, he said that like magic changed, so I kind of feel like I shortchanged myself just a little bit by doing the dual swords, right?
So I played as a temple knight, and he had some miracles, but no magic,
right? So, like, were the miracles different from Dark Souls, Demon Souls?
Not appreciably, no. I had one that was heal, which is the same, exact same heal right. spell that the Temple Knight had in Demon Souls. And I never really played a faith-based character in Dark Souls, so I can't compare that. The other one was called War, which was a buff to your attack and defense.
Right.
And I didn't realize until late in the game, but it's actually a huge buff to defense. And so I used it more and more often as I got into the game.
Mm-hmm.
Cause it busts your attack, but you just become a tank when you have it.
Right.
And then the final spell, I think that I was able to buy was called, Final Miracle. Although it seems this one seemed like it might've been like a dark miracle or I don't know what to categorize it as, but it was called Dark Orb. And basically it was, Wrath of God, I think from Demon Souls, where it just kind of explodes around you and knocks people back.
Yeah. Like a force push kind of thing.
Exactly. But the thing is, it took so long to actually cast it. Do you call it casting if it's a miracle?
Invoke. I just say casting.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Let's get super pretentious up in here. but yeah, it took so long to cast that I couldn't really reliably use it. It would be great because there a large portion of the beta was on, on or near some sort of cliff edge.
Mm-hmm. To just like knock some fools off.
Yeah. But you cast and it kind of locks you in place and there's the charge up, and to be able to whip that out in the middle of combat real quick would be super useful kind of opportunistically, but this kind of forced you to plan to the extent that, it wasn't useful. Yeah.
Well, there's a stat that dictates how quickly you can cast spells now.
So, oh, yeah. Agility, right?
I believe agility affects that. Like, agility kind of seems to be the new endurance, in this, insofar as
there's still endurance.
There is still endurance, and that affects, you know, just kind of how much stamina you have available to yourself. However, just the, you know, the idea that this controls how quickly you roll and how quickly you run, kind of obviates the need for stamina a little bit.
And how quickly you raise your shield, which I found really interesting.
Yeah, yeah. So, like, agility kind of seems like the way to go. I forget if that... It may entirely be true that that agility affects spell casting time.
Does it affect how much you can block?
That would be, like, just down to the shield, usually. That and how much poise you have.
Like, before you get your guard broken.
Oh yeah, poise. Like, I think poise is entirely up to the equipment that you have. In which case, endurance would be valuable because it helps you equip more without being encumbered.
Which is funny.
At least in Dark Souls, for me, it was all about how much, all about endurance, because it was all about the degree to which I could keep blocking things without being knocked over.
Yeah, your poise is entirely determined by your equipment, and your equipment that you can equip is entirely determined by your endurance. So
when I was doing my read through everything first 15 minutes, I brought up the stats menu and hit select so I could read all the stuff. And for some reason, it selected poise, and I thought it was still on the menu of things you could actually level up. Okay, so yeah, I did that for. I was like, oh my god, poise is a levelable stat, and then it wasn't, and I was sad.
Yeah,
but
yeah, something that was interesting about reading those item descriptions was, it was very clear that everything was taking place in the future, because like they were making allusions to stuff that I knew from the lore of Dark Souls. However, it was like this forgotten person. And I was like, I know who they're talking about. Wait.
Oh, really? Well, yeah. give me some examples, because I didn't pick up on it.
So the first merchant that you can get to, she sells a special hat, like the Huntsman's hat or something like that. And it mentions like a legendary hunter, and that's Ferris, right?
Okay, yeah, but wasn't Ferris like legendary at the time of Dark Souls?
Yeah,
as well?
Yeah, but now her name's been forgotten. Too.
Oh,
yeah,
gotcha.
So it's pretty inconsequential. Like, you never ever encounter Ferris, but like there's more of that kind of stuff that I don't want to go too far into.
What?
Well, no, you encounter somebody who's named Ferris, but it's actually just a person who took all of their
gear.
I'm
saying in Dark Souls 2, you don't know that.
Oh yeah, yeah. You know, just because time is weird, but they play with it, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. So I spent a lot of time doing that, and when I started playing, like, I was really just like it was remarkable how quick it felt like, you know, felt to me. And we were texting back and forth during this entire exchange, and that may have just been because the dual swordsman had really high agility. I didn't check, but like it felt like even faster than Demon Souls, which is substantially quicker, more limber than Dark Souls to begin with, right? Did you notice that as a Temple Knight, or were you?
I did. There's it felt like the best comparison I can make is, you know how in the other games there's kind of like your, you know, quarter of your equip burden, half of your equip burden, and then above that,
different
move sets. It felt like, you know, a step down from whatever equip burden you were used to. It felt a bit like the change from a medium equip burden to a light equip burden.
Right. Yeah. So that was the biggest thing I think for me. Playing playing with the dual wielding, I appreciated the quicker move set, but I kind of found myself reverting back to using a Zvi, which just kind of to me just meant like either I'm really used to that, or that is an effective way for the way that I'm used to playing.
Is that the same move set? By the way,
it's more thrusty than a Zvihunter is. You pick up the actual Zai, and it's you know pretty much the same. But yeah, so I wasn't entirely pleased just because it was so easy to get stun locked, and I've broken myself of the habit of always needing to be behind a shield. However, you know, probably by a combination of being really fragile and also the way that these levels are kind of laid out, that make it really difficult to dodge, or this level was laid out.
Oh yeah, definitely.
Yeah. Yeah. It kind of made me yearn to have a shield, and you have one like with the way that they're laying everything out. Like, I had at least like 8 different combinations of weapons I could get to at any given time.
Yeah. Because there's 3 slots per arm, right?
Yeah. Yeah. And there are more like quick use item slots as well.
So what did your dual swordsman start with?
Man, it was like a straight sword and a dagger, but then there was also a gigantic sword and then a medium sword. Like, basically this was like some kind of R.A. Salvatore Forgotten Realms character.
I have all the swords.
Yes.
Cool. All of them.
And then any sort of utility items or?
Not that I remember. So I never quite figured out what the human effigies were for, but I guess that replaces humanity.
Yeah, so the way I figured it was, when you are undead, mm-hmm. you still have your full health, but every time you die undead, that goes down a little bit.
Right.
So it's you know, kinder to start, but can get worse.
Right.
The way to bump yourself back up to full health was to use the human effigy.
Yeah, yeah. Which just, you know, speaking to the fact that humanity is not just scattered everywhere, that probably has a narrative significance.
Yeah, that is kind of interesting. And then the other thing is, you don't need to be at a bonfire to use it. You can just whip it out.
Yeah,
and go, which is nice, because then you can kind of bump yourself.
Whip this.
Yeah. God damn it, David! I was going to do that.
But you know, you kind of make your way to the boss fight, and then right before you're like, I'm at 75% health. But you know, I'm kind of familiar with the area now. I can roll through this, and then you get to the boss gate and be like, okay, now I'm going to saddle up to 100% health. And I don't have to go back to a bonfire to do that.
Right.
So, which is you're only wasting it if you know you're going to need it.
Right. No, wait a minute.
Which isn't wasting it. Yeah.
Yeah. did you ever manage to land a hit on the boss?
It depends. So do you want to talk about the boss right now, or do you want to work your way to it?
The boss has been, we can freeform jazz it. I kind of want to be a little bit light and breezy on all this, because I feel like I'm boring Ben to death.
What?
No, I just know that you're not interested in Dark Souls.
It's all right.
So, okay. Yeah, I want to be courteous. I want to be courteous.
All right. So, go, what was the boss for you?
Yeah.
Well, the same for me. But yeah. What was the boss called?
So they've revealed this boss several times, and this might not be the final encounter with it, but it's the chariot.
Wait, what?
What?
No, it wasn't.
Wait a minute. Okay. So you were joking.
Yeah, hold on. Okay, so I went into a room. They're like,
"Am I gonna have to mute this?"
you're not gonna have to mute it. Like, the chariot's been all over the place.
Maybe I didn't even get to the final boss then. Okay,
yeah.
So you go past the ledge with the two red phantom sickle guys, right?
Yeah, I didn't go that way.
What?
No, I didn't go that way.
What? No, that's where the boss is, dude.
Is it like, because I went through the valley that was full of like five sets of like black phantom enemies that would jump down from the top of this canyon.
Oh, and I saw the red phantom at the other side of that bridge, and I was like, nope, I'll explore elsewhere.
Yeah, no, I went through that, and then that was where I found the chariot.
Oh snap! Holy
shit!
There are different bosses. Okay, okay, so cool. What was the boss for you?
Our instincts were correct. It was that bone chariot that they've put in all the promo materials.
Wow. Okay.
Huh.
Nuts.
I had 3 hours to explore this area, and I didn't see all of it.
No, I missed that. I just assumed it looked like it was going into a different part of the world, and I was like, it's probably just gated off, and I don't want to fight this red phantom because he's super hard. So I went the other way along the ledges. Mm-hmm. Did you get to the two red phantom sickle guys?
No.
Okay. So there's basically, that means you've got your little dredglings, and then you've got your kind of like assassin dagger dudes, and then you've got these big lumbering guys with two sickles. Which a lot of the enemies in this area are dual wielding, so kind of they're making the most of that.
Yeah.
And then you encounter red phantom versions of the sickle guys while you're on a tiny little ledge, and that is super difficult. It took me lots and lots of tries. The good thing is they don't respawn once you defeat them. And then you get to the other side, and there's a fog gate. So the boss that I fought, which I have not seen in any promo materials, but again, it's in the beta, and you know whatever. Was actually three kind of Grim Reaper style skeleton dudes.
Huh.
And I didn't beat them. Did you beat the chariot boss?
No, I never landed a hit.
Okay, cool. Okay. So you're able to fight them, but they're like, they have super strong magic attacks. These skeleton dudes do. And they killed me almost instantly the first two times. So the final time I pulled someone in. Which worked really well, and I used that war buff right before I went in, which is, again, I kind of realized that made you super tanky. Managed to kill the three skeleton guys, which I wasn't paying that much attention to the health bar. I think only like the big one in the middle might have been the actual boss, but the two ones on the side were kind of distracting you. So, but I took all three of them out, I thought, but there was still a lot of health bar left, and then all the bone wheels started spawning. And literally the room just got filled with freaking skeletons and bone wheels. And I got, you know, I just nothing I could do. I died to that. And that was right near the end of the test. So I couldn't get back and try it again. But it was such a great ending moment to the beta. It was so Dark Souls that it's like, oh man, I've spawned in a friend. He's kind of, you know, he got taken out, but he managed to put a pretty good dent in. I was able to get the two side guys and was taking out the main Grim Reaper type boss dude. And then he's like, oh, and goes away. And I'm like, I did it. There's half his health left. And then just bone wheels come flooding down on you. And it's like, of course, that is quintessential Dark Souls.
Yeah.
So that was, this is really weird. I did not realize that there were different bosses. Interesting.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah. that was my experience with it.
I had no idea either. I mean, so the chariot fight takes place in like a circular like tunnel.
Uh-huh.
And there are little like alcoves and nooks that you can hide in order to, you know, get out of this guy's way as he goes to pass by you. And he kind of has these Ben-Hur like, you know, hubcap strut kind of spike things that will just mow you down. And anytime I ventured to even so much as dare to try and attack him from any angle, I would just be just insta-deathed.
Now, was he like actively going after you, or was he just kind of doing his thing?
He was just riding around in circles.
Just having fun, just doing donuts?
Yeah, pretty much. Yeah, yeah. So
interesting.
So yeah, it's you know, just and again, that also felt quintessentially Dark Souls, because like you just get in this situation and, you know, your first several tries, I probably gave it about like three or four shots before the test ended, but you know, just like how like it feels insurmountable.
The and this is impossible reaction. Yeah. Oh, good. Yeah. I'm glad to hear. Mm-hmm. That's really cool. All right. Yeah. Anything about the run up to it that stood out to you?
So I kind of liked how there were like hidden areas, you know, just kind of, that's not new, but that they held on to it. So that area where you could drop down and find the poison chest, which just means like, you know, Dark Souls has the, you know, mimics, which will just straight up and eat you. But yeah, this just has like a chest that will spout poison gas at you.
And did it actually poison you?
As they do.
Yes, it did poison me. So.
Okay, I must have had higher resistance because it didn't. It like filled it up most of the way, but it didn't actually poison me. The way you get to that is great too, because there's this like rickety bridge that you got to walk across, and you can see under it there's a thing you can drop to that is just seemingly like. You have no idea. It looks like you can't get back from it. And very clearly, it is not positioned for you to be able to jump back to the ledge. But there's an item on it. So you're like, well, you know.
It's right by the bonfire. So I'm going to, if I die,
yeah, I'll give it a try. And you drop down, and then you can see from there that you can't add. There's actually a lower ledge for you to jump through, which then leads you through this whole extra set of catacombs. And it's very, again, we say so Dark Souls, but it's very in keeping with this whole kind of, the what seems like a little side passage winds up being a lot bigger than you thought.
Yeah.
And that's something that happens again and again and again in the Souls games, and it was very intact in this beta.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, so it felt like an awesome little cross section. I mean, how about you? Did anything stick out about the run up?
You mentioned it, the Valley of Red Phantoms.
Which is like nope.
Yep, nope, thank you. I'll go somewhere else for now. And it was very fortunate that they don't respawn. That was a huge relief. Mm-hmm. What else stood out? The interactivity of the bridge, I guess. I don't remember seeing anything like that in either of the Souls games. And you can tell me if I'm wrong on
that.
Oh,
you just mean that you can fall through it?
Oh, no. I mean, well, there's that. No, I'm thinking of the stone bridge that goes... goes, you know, over the ledges to the boss I found.
Uh-huh.
You can kind of pull a lever and there's this big stone bridge that gets lowered down. Did you get that?
No.
How different were our playthroughs? Jeez.
So different. Like, wow.
Yeah, but you pull a lever and then you can actually, like, it's not just a cutscene showing the bridge going down. You actually can, like, turn and watch real time in the game as the environment changes.
Right.
And it's essentially lowering a drawbridge, but it's not, I can't think of any other place in the Souls games that kind of movement. Maybe the big tower in Orlando, or mm-hmm. yeah, in Anna and Orlando, like it had that kind of feel to it. So there's your examples of what's been done before. What else? Did you get baited?
No, thankfully.
Oh, I got invaded like 4 times.
Yeah, I was never human though, so.
Oh, it doesn't matter.
Oh, really?
Yeah, I wasn't human for much of it either.
Yeah.
But you can, and I think that's one of the big things that they touted, right? Is you can get invaded no matter what.
So I guess I just got lucky/unlucky, so. Yeah.
Lucky because I still suck at being invaded. And the one time I actually fought the dude, I lost. Mm-hmm. But it's funny, the first 3 times I was invaded, the idiots like found a way to fall off a ledge or down a hole or kill themselves before they could get to me. Which again, so freaking Dark Souls. Like, that's so great. Mm-hmm. And just to watch them like see me get all excited and run towards me, and I'm like, oh crap, here we go. And then to just see them taken out in some hilarious way. It was very gratifying.
Mm-hmm. One thing that I didn't quite care for, or it may take a moment to grow on me, is how dark everything is.
I turned up the brightness several notches.
Yeah, so whenever I get that, like, you know, like, okay, adjust the brightness until you can see the logo, but not the thing around it. Like, whenever I get that, I always go just, like, maybe about, like, 10% brighter than what it says, just because I enjoy being able to see things. That even, you know, like, all of that said, it still felt crazy dark to me. And the reason that I believe this is still early is because there was no torch item to help counteract that, whereas they have kind of like advertised that as being a feature. I don't know, it looks neat. I like that, you know, just kind of along with the general dynamism, you know, that bridge that you mentioned, the fact that cloth kind of reacts to the way you move as opposed to having a fixed animation structure, and then just the shadows being a little bit more detailed or substantially more detailed. That's all cool, and I understand that the deeper shadows kind of have to come with that. However, it did get like way too dark in a lot of places.
Yeah. Specifically inside, it was pitch black. And there was a section where kind of one of the first things you walk through is kind of a pitch black room with a narrow walkway, but it was to the point where you couldn't see the walkway. Mm-hmm. I get the whole hey, inch forward, see what's in front of you thing, but it was like even that was impractical. Mm-hmm. But I mean, you know, that might just be the TV I play on. And when I turned up the brightness, it was fixed. So what am I complaining about?
Yeah. I don't know. That's really all that I have to say about it. I mean, obviously I'm excited. I'm a little bit crestfallen that it's gonna be another 4 months until I can play it, but yeah. I'm happy I got the opportunity to try it, right?
Let's say if there was a beta every night from 2 to 5, I feel like I would get very little sleep.
Yeah, that would alter my lifestyle in some very some very distinct ways. So
yeah, something you mentioned is that when you die now you lose health. Is how is that? That at least for me is kind of a red flag, but I mean does it end up being that way?
Like that's a thing in Demon Souls, you know, and the way that you counteract
Demon Souls.
Well, so the way that you counteract that is just to understand that, like, yeah, it shows you that that half of your meter is full, but that's just your maximum health, and having full health is the strange part. That's out of the ordinary. That's a buff, right? Being in body form or human form is a buff. Like once you can accept that, you're perfectly fine because it is just entirely arbitrary, right?
See, do you have more health overall? Because at least in Dark Souls, if I had half health, that would mean I was getting one-shotted.
You're gonna get one-shotted by most things anyway.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
So you're much less hardy in these games than you are in Dark Souls.
I mean, I was pretty
like, even Dark Souls is gonna be like real problematic. I guess what I would say is learn to play. No,
in Dark Souls, I could take at least two hits, sometimes three before I went down.
And I just think it's a matter of learning curve.
I think there were your typical dredglings that barely did anything to you and weren't really a concern. Then there were your kind of medium fare enemies that you could take several hits from, but they if they got a combo going on you, it'd drain you pretty fast. And then you had your sickle ogres or whatever they were called, these big guys that could pretty much one shot you, maybe two shot if you're lucky. And certainly the Red Phantom versions could one-shot you. So there's a range. What I would say is what happens, it seemed to me to take about a tenth of your health at a time. You just reminded me of something that we didn't talk about, Cole, which is the hard mode that happened the last 15 minutes.
I was just like, what? Right when I get to the boss, you're going to crank up the difficulty?
That's right. Dark Souls has a hard mode now.
So it's not so much that it's a hard mode, it's that they're like, okay, let's turn this on because we want to try and basically stress test our difficulty as well and gather data about what people are doing. So
you don't think it'll actually be a mode that you can enable?
No, I think that's literally this just them trying to see what they can get away with.
Maybe. So what I noticed there is that when you died, and I didn't die a lot, but it went from taking away about a tenth of your health at a time to taking away a more significant chunk every time.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So, yeah.
Yeah, I died a lot quicker, but I had literally gotten to the boss like right before that too. So,
which is funny the way that times out, because that's exactly the same thing that happened to me.
Yeah.
So did you not find like the skeleton area or any of the ledge stuff?
No.
Wow. Huh. You just jogged my memory of another thing. And I think I texted you about this, but basically the area you missed, there's one thing that kind of goes along a cliffside, which is just a ledge. And then you can, in certain places, go into a cave. There's like a big cave area that has the whole reanimating skeletons with the necromancers protecting them or whatever it is. A pickup you got in the cave, I didn't actually get to equip it, but was a spell called Replenish. At least I think it was a spell, which I don't know if it was in Dark Souls, but in Demon Souls, it was a spell that replenished the health of the people around you.
Right.
So like kind of a co-op thing. Which, they've announced for Dark Souls 2 that anyone that you co-op with will gradually lose health as they go. So I could see this replenish spell being a great way to kind of extend their time with you. Mm-hmm. And if you really need the co-op help, just like anything in Dark Souls, like it's hard, but if you find the right item, it really helps you out. So if you really need the co-op help, you can equip this replenish spell or miracle or whatever it is, and kind of keep those phantoms with you for longer.
Yeah. Okay, cool. Yeah. So I don't know that I have anything more to say about it, to be entirely honest with you.
It was so good. You didn't play it. No. Actually, I think a lot of people who listened to the show did. It was good stuff.
Yeah, there's some people who chimed in who played it. So hopefully.
Oh,
good.
I was going to say, Phil Holmes, best thing I've seen for the beta, drank dead guy ale while playing the beta. I thought that was so appropriate. So yeah. Good on you.
Nice. Cool. So is that all you played?
Yeah. It's only two things. Well, a system and a game. So
yeah.
But yeah, that's what I've been playing.
Huh. So I have one real quick. I want to try and keep us as close to 2 hours as possible. So I'm going to go. It's just an iOS game. It's called Paint It Back. precisely. So the plot of it is that you're an artist, and one day something happens and all of your paintings are undone, so you have to go in and paint them all again. But that is pretty much just window dressing around the fact that this is the best Picross game I've played on iOS.
Nice.
Yeah, so if you're not familiar with Picross, it's kind of like a visual Sudoku, where you have a grid, and then there are numbers along each row and column that indicate how many of the rows or how many of the dots should be filled in. And it's like a little logic puzzle trying to figure out, just basically how to do that without any contradictions. Most Picross games on iOS, they're interface is just the worst thing, just in a front to eyes and also functionality. Whereas this is like actually really well thought out. You know, there are two main things you need to be able to do in any Picross game, which is mark your mark the ones that need to be marked, and then also like eliminate any ones they're just kind of like, okay, I know that that's not supposed to be filled in, so I can just flag it like I would flag something in Minesweeper. But the cool thing that it does to kind of match those two up, obviously those two work, is switching between them is real easy, as opposed to like some of the weird gestures that other Picross things have asked me to do. And then also the way that it blanks out the numbers after you fulfill the requirements is nice. So it's actually easier to keep track of where you are in a puzzle, which is pretty good. That and like the larger puzzles. So some of the clues are pretty esoteric and they're kind of goofy. And like instead of working with like a 15 by 15 like you're normally doing, you're working on like, you know, 36 by 25 grids, like these gigantic ones.
Wow.
But there's a regular mode which breaks that up into like 10 by 10s and, you know, et cetera. Or you can do pro mode, which is all of the like just like filling out the entire thing. And it generally works really well alongside of that. At either scale. For me, Picross is just kind of something to do to, you know, like think about something while I do other things with my hands and eyes. You know, it's like the equivalent of like a stress toy or, you know, whatever. It's real important to do something with your hands while you're trying to think of something. Like right now I am playing with a pen that I have a roll of tape wrapped around, and I'm spinning the roll of tape around the pen. but yeah, it's like it's really great. And you know, it does in-app purchases in a way that I find very non-objectionable, which is the app is free, but you get like 20 or 30 puzzles out of it, like three galleries. And then if you want to unlock the rest, which is like 200 Picross puzzles, it's only like $4. And then so it's like a demo system, which works really well. Like I was like, yes, after demonstrating that this is a really competent Picross game, I will give you my money in order to play more Picross. So, yeah.
Nice.
Yeah. So I heartily recommend that. It'll be really good for you if you have not played any Picross in the past. The learning curve is really good. I'm just now getting to the point where it's kind of like, you know, challenging me a lot. But yeah.
Get stiff.
And that is my game.
Multiplayer.
So it is time for multiplayer, where we ask you to respond to us about things and stuff. And I'll read the response, but Dennis, I want you to explain what you did with the capitalization here. So the question is, here's the multiplayer question for tonight. What are your favorite cheat codes or Easter eggs in a video game? Answer tonight by 10 o'clock to get read on blah, blah, blah.
Yeah.
There's strange inner capping here, and like, you know, just being a literate person with eyes, I know that you're trying to pull out a message, but I'm wondering if that, like, what that message was. So it was like, this is some, and then I'm not sure what the last word is.
Oh, it's
it's this.
This is so meta.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
Because it's an Easter egg within the comment about Easter
eggs. Yeah, there we go. Yeah, that's what I was going for. I guess I just didn't get meta. So that, like, yeah. Oh, yeah. So this is. Oh, so I read so, and then the beginning of ME.
As some.
Yeah, as some, yeah. As opposed to two separate words. So that's where I got thrown.
Well, on. If you had seen the capital spaces.
Yeah. So I was just like, what is TA? So well, this is some TA. I don't understand.
Explain yourself.
Yeah. Teach it, sister. Yeah. This is.
Yeah, that's funny.
Yeah. So I'm going to start us off with Tim Schumacher. Or Shoemaker. I'm not sure which one you prefer,
Schumacher?
So I'll do both. Schumacher. There we go. My favorite cheat code ever is from Star Wars Shadow of the Empire for the N64. You could play as AT-STs and AT-ATs in the Hoth level, TIE Fighters, Wampas, and all sorts of other enemies throughout the game. I remember reading about it in Nintendo Power and thinking it was some kind of joke or prank, but it was real and it was awesome. Yeah, I remember that.
I really like the idea of being able to play as Wampum. Wampus.
Wampus,
isn't that old school like text game?
Hunt the Wampus?
Yeah.
Yeah, I think so. Yeah, so
you said Chumbawambas?
Yeah. Okay, so we're let's bring this back on track. You said Wampum, which is what Native Americans traded like beads and shit. And then there was Chumbawamba and then Wumpuses. But yes, Wampas.
There Wampai. We
go. Yeah. No, it was cool running around Echo Base as a Wampa. That was pretty fun.
Nice. Did it like change how you played significantly, or was it just a different skin?
It was just a little mode. Like, you know, like you're a gigantic Getty guy running around. And, you know,
nice.
Yeah.
I believe Battlefront 2, couldn't you play as the Wampa? I think that I'm not.
No, I don't know.
See, I Anybody was just hoping game? You could, like, I don't know, run in and, you know, eventually work your way into the, like, Star Destroyer and destroy it from the inside or something.
Get recruited in the dark side or... Yeah.
Yeah. Let's see here. Ben, what does Omgamoose say?
I think Omgamoose says Omega Moose.
Omega
that's
Moose.
What I want it to be.
The last moose ever, yeah. Favorite cheat code has to be DK mode from GoldenEye, making everyone have giant heads and arms while trying to save the world from those crazy Russians adds a certain je ne sais quoi that improves the whole experience. As for an Easter egg, it's definitely Disco Inferno in Dungeon Keeper 2. Basically, if one of your minions happens to win a jackpot in the casino you build, multicolored lights start exploding everywhere while your minions all dance in Disco Inferno. By the Tramp starts playing.
Nice.
That's fun. Yeah,
I will say that in GoldenEye, though, you ally with somebody from the KGB to take down Trevelyan, who was Eastern European.
Rogue. Well, Trevelyan was Rogue MI6, right? He was a double agent.
But he was a kid. When he was a kid, he was like Eastern European, and his like parents were murdered, and then he was adopted by MI6. But he was,
Wait. But at that point, wasn't Eastern Europe basically part of Russia?
I'm gonna have to consult Wikipedia on this one.
Yeah,
but it was when he was a kid, so I don't know. All right, never mind. That's aside.
DK mode was pretty epic. Yeah, that was the last great like game with cheats I played.
I beg to differ.
Grand Theft
As
Auto.
For my cheat code,
do it.
I was gonna say Grand Theft Auto for a cheat code.
I stand corrected. Grand Theft Auto, yeah.
Because they had some awesome ones. They had the riot mode, which was great amounts of fun. Because all right, so you beat this game and you have like an arsenal of weapons, but it's not challenging anymore. Turn on riot mode. Everybody has a rocket launcher and they're just killing everybody. And so
I think my favorite was like maybe it was Vegas or not Vegas, Vice City. Mm-hmm. Whoever I played it, I think I played at their house and they had riot mode turned on. So like that was how I played the actual storyline. With trying to complete these missions while like I would, stop at a traffic light and then someone would pull out an assault rifle.
As I say, escort missions would be very difficult in that.
you just have this history of just breaking every game you touch. Like I don't say this as a judgment on you, but it's just funny how often that happens to you.
See, and the thing is though, usually it makes them better.
Yeah, right. It's just a remarkable number of the stories that you tell about games that you've played are kind of like that. Yeah. Yeah, Grand Theft Auto is pretty good. As an example. How about you, Dennis? Your Easter eggs.
I have to like some of the stuff that Naughty Dog has done.
Mm-hmm.
So in Uncharted in particular, they have a lot of references to the Jack series, namely a relic that looks like the precursor orbs.
Mm-hmm.
And then I think they also have some writing that's in the precursor language from Jack. So that's kind of fun. Mm-hmm. And then in The Last of Us, if you look in one of the houses, there's actually I think it's Uncharted board game. I've only seen pictures. I haven't found it in the actual game, but so they've got these nice little subtle throwbacks to the previous games in their work.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and they also like foreshadow too. Didn't Uncharted 3 have an article about some kind of weird fungus?
Mm-hmm. Oh yeah, that's right. Yeah. That's right.
at the bar at the very beginning of the game.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Foreshadowing the cordyceps. Yeah. Neat. Let's see here. David, did you give yours? Was that already?
No. I would say, it's hard because there's been a lot of good ones. I would say I appreciate the ones in StarCraft for allowing me to complete the campaign because I only cared about the storyline and I suck at real-time strategy.
Right.
But probably my favorite, I can't actually remember what game had it, but there was one of them that one of the games had a next-gen mode. And when you enabled it, everything became all, like, brown, but with, like, bloom turned up really, really high.
Was it Saints Row the Third?
That's what I was going to guess.
I thought maybe it was actually Resistance, except that Resistance kind of does that on there itself. Yeah.
Or was it Far Cry 3?
See, no, this was, like, this was, like, our freshman or sophomore year, like real early on in the cycle.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, I don't know. This sounds familiar, but doing a search for next gen mode cheat doesn't pull anything up. So
yeah, but I just remember it just being like basically everything looks like Gears of War.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Neat.
All right. I wanna jump in and say I wanna apologize to Omega Moose. Because they were Cossack Russians, so they were Russians. So they were the bad guys.
Nice. Let's see here. Dennis, can you read Christopher Schlee's?
I could. I've also got two on my wall.
Oh, two. Why don't you do your two?
Yeah, they're quick ones. Chad says, and we all know this one, up, down, left, right, B-A-B-A, start.
Yeah.
Which is one of the many variations on the Konami code. Which you can do on like Facebook on basically everything has a Konami code.
Yeah, it's basically like one of the original memes, like Killroy was here, except yeah, for video yeah. games.
Yeah, for video yeah. game cheats. Which I think in was it where did it first appear? Was it Mortal Kombat and it would give you
Contra.
Infinite lives? Contra. That's
yeah,
yeah.
It's Contra.
Contra. Yep.
Yeah, Mortal that's right. Kombat was Midway.
Okay.
Yeah. To give you an idea, that actually even shows up in Kingdom of Loathing.
Yes.
it's everywhere. So, yeah, that's a good one. And then Jala says the Summoner's Rip on D&D, which I am not familiar with.
Yeah, I don't know what that is.
Yeah, I'm not familiar with that one actually.
Oh. Our nerd blind spots.
Yeah, we'll take your word for it.
It was liked by Gary, so we'll have to ask him.
does Heidoken does that count as a cheat code? Because
no,
I feel like
it's a special move. I mean, it's similar in that it is a very specific, but that was like intended to be part of the game, right?
If you don't read the manual, everything is a cheat code. Yeah.
Funny,
I can move That's... right. Cheat code.
It's very deep.
Huh, let's see here. So in between those, I'll just go ahead and do mine. So in 8-bit and 16-bit games, there was a very large percentage of games that just let you do a code to do like a sound test mode.
Yeah.
So like if you want to just listen to music, that was
really
the way to get in there and do that. And I have good memories of using my tape recorder and then just like taping sound test music off of the TV using that and then listening
to cool.
it throughout the day. Yeah. So like in terms of an Easter egg / code that was available in most things, that was really cool. Right.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So that'd be mine. And let's see here. David, why don't you read Christopher Schlee's?
Sure. Christopher says that this causes an error hidden level in Rise of the Triad Dark War. It was only really good for one viewing. Back in the day, basically, a moving wall would roam across the screen and fall off the level, and a drawing would appear with the wall shouting, "I'm free!" And then the game would crash. I'm just imagining this wall yell, "Freedom!" I also like the little holiday things they would do on major holidays. Christmas, for example, someone would be wearing a fest hat during the level loading screen, and some high-quality MIDI Christmas music would play during the levels. Nice. That's kind of awesome. It was a fun and weird thing they put in for some reason. That was a joy discovered by randomly booting the game up during a holiday.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's actually pretty entertaining.
Yeah, it's pretty good. And those things are neat, like when it responds to your calendar. Yeah.
So yeah, actually NetHack did some funny things with that. Like, if you create a character on Friday the 13th, you would just be, like, crazy unlucky.
Yeah.
Nice.
Ben, you had a question.
Yeah, I was going to say there's one Easter egg I wanted to mention, too, kind of apropos to an earlier conversation. In Arkham Asylum, there's one spot, and I guess since David's going to play it, I won't say where, but there's one spot where there's a wall that you can blow up if you place all three of your explosive gel on the wall and detonate them all at once. But nobody found it, and so the game company had to release this Easter egg and like had to tell people where it was and how to get it. But it contained maps with plans for Arkham City for their next game.
Yeah. Like it had like personal diaries of Hugo Strange and stuff.
Yeah, and I think it had journals from the Warden mm-hmm. Sharp. So yeah. But I love the amount of confidence they had that immediately after making that game, they knew they were gonna make a second one and they had already planned out the story for it. So.
That's funny. That's nice. Like in the original Shadowrun, they at least recently came out and said the developers were like, yeah, we had a cheat code in there. They said what it did. I can't remember what it was now. But it, like, they didn't remember what the cheat code was. They're like, it had something to do with like standing to the left of that one lamppost, or it was one of the lampposts, and you hit like something, and like they're like, seriously, we hit something in there and no one ever found it.
And we lost the source code.
We would like your help retrieving it.
Like, and all these moments will be lost like tears in rain. Time to die.
It's kind of semi-similar to just over-the-top cheat codes is the Payday series has done that.
Yeah, where you turn your hat around and then you win.
What?
Sounds about right.
Are we referencing over-the-top?
Yeah, you said over-the-top cheat codes.
Okay. I see what happened there. No, they haven't found it for the second game, but like in the first game, you know, there are several parts in the levels that referenced cheat codes. And you'd have to look it up, but like in one of the heists, there was something where like in a certain room, if you held off like the police waves for like over an hour, like a vault would open up, and like it's just that really over the top things that like, you know, the game was out for a long time before people finally figured it out, and this was when they were, you know, saying, telling you, hey, there's something here.
Right.
Interesting.
Games like that are awesome.
Yeah. So, yeah, thank you, everybody, for responding to that. If you want to participate in the discussion, it's facebook.com/thelevelpodcast, and we'll be there for you.
And you're all horrible cheaters.
Yeah, shame on you. Want to button it up?
No.
Too bad. And Ben, you laughing as consent. Let's go. So it's time we wrap it up. We're going a little bit long, so I'm going to spare you the details, especially since I gave you the iTunes rundown. So all I will say is if you're going to be doing any Christmas/holiday/gift time shopping, you're going to buy somebody that Thanksgiving cornucopia, go to duckfeed.tv/tipjar and buy it on Amazon using that link. That gives us a cut, and that helps run the show and the network and, you know, cover all the expenses. Yes, Other than that, kind of like big announcement, the first Hex Crank article went up.
Yes.
About Haunted House. I'm very proud of that. So that is hexcrank.com or duckfeed.tv/hexcrank, and it is also listed on the front page.
And it's that, really, really well written. Cole, you should think about like writing as an occupation.
Yeah, no, it's one of those things. Like, I just want to follow my muse. I think that what I'm missing in my life is an opportunity to stand all day at a desk and write stuff for other people. That is I think something that is missing in my life.
I have to say, Cole, just to give you an idea though, this your posting was when I realized truly how like sleep deprived and studying I am. when I read your post and your reference, that this is beyond my normal scope. My immediate thought was, but if you go beyond your scope, then you'll get a compiler error.
Fantastic.
It's like, that's the point where I'm like, wow, I need to go to bed.
Well, you know, if I can serve as a warning for others, I've accomplished.
I'm really excited because survival horror has always interested me, but I don't like them, if that makes sense. Yeah. So like
most of them are not good games.
Huh?
Most of them are not good games.
Well, just though I'm interested to see like, I don't know, the perspective from someone that does like genre.
Yeah, the next one is a real stinker, Ghost Manor. That one should go up on Monday. Ooh. But yeah, it is real bad. I kind of can't wait to get out of the Atari and into something besides the Atari.
Ghosts with proper manners.
You have to try and pick up the right fork for whatever dish is in front of you. But because you're incorporeal, you're not able to. You just phase right through it. So it's an impossible game. If it was released today, it would be lauded as an artistic sensation. But right now, So yeah, there's that. Also, the live episode of Watch Out for Fireballs just went up. So if you're a Kickstarter backer, that should be available to you. If not, it is available on the store for a paltry $2.50. So, yeah. Neat. Blah, blah, blah. What are we looking at?
Other shows on the network, all of them.
Yep, all of them. Do it. It's a lot of content. Just go hog wild. But otherwise, let's do Twitters and get out of here, guys.
Mm-hmm.
All right. So, I'm Cole Ross, your host. I'm at Cole Ross on Twitter.
I am Dennis Furia at DFuria on Twitter.
I'm David MoneySmith at MoneySmith777.
I'm Ben Merkel at Merkelizer. I was going to let it slide.
go ahead.
It's Ben Merkel at Merkelizer.
Okay, there we go. So before we do the sign-off, I need to ask you guys, in terms of title, what is better? Holding Meat is a Day One Patch or Choice Nuggets?
I have to say the Day One Patch.
Oh, I was going to go to Choice Nuggets.
Okay.
They're both good.
You have to break the tie.
What's up, indecisiveness?
You have to break the tie.
Nah, dude.
All right. Well, it'll be a surprise to us all. Good night, everybody.
Good night to everyone.
Now no one gets a title.
I'm going home for the weekend to celebrate all of the birthdays that happened in November.
Including yours?
Including my own, yes.
Including mine then, too? Am I being celebrated?
Yes, everybody who is born in November. So
all right.
Yeah.
So, oh, wow.
Yep. No, it's a whole big wide world we've got. Yeah. So I'm going home for that, for Family Shines.
Family Shines.
Yeah. Family Shine.
Yeah.
The new family self-help book by Cole Ross, Family Shines.
Family Shines. It just has me like holding my hands up like, on the cover. Yeah. See, I make that noise, you know exactly what I'm doing.
Yep.